All right, guys, welcome back to the podcast. I do apologize for the delay in posting episodes. Before we get to the show, real quick, I want to remind you guys that starting in January, PGA Tour Live is going to be back. So put PGA Tour Live on your Christmas wish list. It's just $39.99 for the year. This is the perfect time to buy it. And with that, you get $40 off tee times at teeoff.com. So right there, it's going to pay for itself. And a bit later, I'm going to tell you guys about some more holiday ideas from Callaway. But for now, let's get to Kevin Van Valkenburg talking about Tiger Woods.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most.
Expect anything different? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. It's Solly here. Thank you for the lovely supporting and encouraging messages on the extended break from the podcast we've had. I am coming to you live from the future, 18 hours ahead of you, KVV, from New Zealand. But we brought in Kevin Van Valkenburg to, of course, debrief on Tiger Woods' season debut. First time we've seen him in almost a year at the Hero World Challenge. First off, Kevin Van Valkenburg from ESPN. How are we doing?
I'm doing good, Solly. Hey, I was thinking today, remember when you said to me, hey, I'm thinking about going to New Zealand and Australia to play some golf. Would you be up for joining me? And I was like, oh, I don't think I can. And then after seeing all your photos this week, I wanted to hang myself. So thanks for, thanks for the invite anyway, and I'm sorry I dropped the ball.
Well, the funny thing is I've had several Twitterati people tell me that I should not have gone to Australia and New Zealand, that I should have been standing by watching Tiger at the Hero. That's the level we're at.
A bucket list trip for ridiculous hit and giggle events. That sounds right.
No, that's where we're at with the status of Twitter. That's my current enthusiasm level for what I'm reading on there. But so you are the resident. Oh, that's right. We haven't even talked about this publicly. Tell everyone your recent life change you've made.
I was pretty deep in the Twitter game for a lot of years. That's how you and I became friends. And I just didn't like how it was making me feel on a day-to-day basis, and felt like it was time for me to step back and deactivate the account and go dark for a while. Just maybe, work on the artistic game for a bit as opposed to the free tweet game. So,
and what's that experience been like?
But without all the amazing golf.
That doesn't sound good at all. That doesn't sound like me at all. Yeah. But what's it been like?
A little weird. A little bit sometimes feel like you're not involved in the conversation. You want to crack the same kind of jokes that you've been cracking, and you just, there's no one to hear them. But also, it's a good detox, a good focus on the things that I actually get paid to do, as opposed to little ridiculous quips. And no one, if people really hate you, they can't find you, which is interesting. It's I've seen some, every now and then I'll go on there and I'll just be like, oh, I wonder if I'll put in a link to one of my stories and that I've written recently, and just sort of see, people are talking about this, whatever. If they don't like it, they're really mad that they can't find me. There's a lot of, where's this coward? Show yourself, coward.
You're afraid of Gary Player. That's what's going on. You're running from Gary.
Where's this young man? He's not on the Twitter box. Unbelievable.
Will you be back, or are you gone for good?
I think Augusta will bring me back. I mean, which is, of course, you can't tweet like on the course, but the lead up of the majors season is going to make me want to come back and be a part of the convo. But I just needed a 6-month detox or so.
Is it the replies mostly that wanted you to turn away, or the actual things you see on your timeline?
Things I see on my timeline, and it's also removing the temptation to tweet dumb things. A lot of people have gotten in trouble recently for tweeting things that don't necessarily jibe with their job, and as I'm not a person with an enormous amount of self-control, and so I needed to just sort of as my buddy Wright says, Twitter's just a weapon that basically is going to shoot your dick off at some point. So I think I decided to take that out of the equation and move forward for a little while without it.
All right. Well, on that note, let's talk about the big cat. I got to lean on you a bit here, as spoiler alert, I have not, as many people have pointed out, and I have not been watching much of the Hero World Challenge. I've caught some highlights. I've caught the end of a few rounds, but it does happen quite early in the morning over here. But first, I want to talk about as mentioned, you are the resident Tiger skeptic. But I want to first get your thoughts on what was good that you saw from Tiger this week at the Hero.
So obviously first good is just swinging pain-free. Like it, I assume that he's pain-free and, you know, he's not exactly the most forthcoming, but we didn't see any wincing or we didn't see any sort of cringing or any walking gingerly. Whomever this back surgeon is who did this is some sort of genius. Like the difference between all the microdiscectomies and the spine fusion seems remarkable, even though I think, you know, his game is still going to be kind of up and down. And I think there's going to be some scars here and there before he's really ever going to, you know, compete in a major, which is all that really matters. But the actual, I mean, he was swinging it hard. I'm a little bit still nervous about how hard he was hitting it. But as you know, some of our guys in our group are saying, like, he's ripping at the ball, and it's not something that I expected at all.
And that's my point to that was, and you've made the case many times that you just are, you fear Tiger overswinging, and the reports leading up to the event this week were that his distance was back, his speed was back, and you're of the opinion that this is going to be a short comeback if that is the case. But my point was kind of like, man, if it's not really worth it for him to come back if he can't come back and swing it like that. If there's no real point of it if he's trying to protect against something he's never going to have any kind of aggressive mentality, and it's just not going to work from a mental standpoint or from a physical standpoint. So I thought to see him just like recoiling and having no fear of much of anything was the best sign. There were some iffy swings we saw in there, which is to be expected, but I just think that what I'm reading online, and again, kind of, you know, you're not seeing this because you're not on Twitter right now, but like it's just everything's just too extremes, and it's like you can't find this nice, it can be both things. Like I was pretty encouraged from what I saw, but I'm not going to get super hyped until I see him on a better course. And like if you point out that Albany is like not a great PGA Tour course and not a great test and probably hides a little bit of what Tiger is trying to get away with right now, then you're viewed as a Tiger hater. Like, then people come at you and be like, how can you not be excited for this? Like, I've been waiting all year for this. It's not a fun place. So in that regard, I have no regrets in kind of missing out on this past weekend. But I mean, at the same time, it's great to see him back. And I would imagine, I haven't seen any ratings or anything come through. This has got to be like Golf Channel NBC's highest rated tournament of the year, don't you think?
I would absolutely think so. I mean, I want to talk about the media coverage of Tiger in a bit, but like just the sort of the fan reaction for it, that was kind of my whole point about let's just sort of be cautious about this because I feel like we've seen this movie before. And so, you know, in the initial part, it was like, oh my God, Tiger's back, he's amazing.
Is that Elmo?
Yeah. And then, like, I'm not kidding, on Saturday or whatever, it seemed like the Golf Tiger Tracker, the Golf Channel Golf Tracker, was about ready to drink bleach because it was just like, oh, is there anything else on? This seems horrible. I hate myself. It's like, it doesn't have to be like the end of the world or like he's going to win the next five majors. It's going to be a sort of a slow process if this is going to work. And like, even when like he was pretty healthy, like, he was still having a little bit of trouble closing the deal in certainly in majors and some other tournaments. And so I think some of that's going to come be the same, but there's so many reasons to be encouraged by just how hard he was swinging it. He's the greatest iron player that ever lived. I mean, it's just a fact. And I feel like if he can hit the driver, like he hit it this week, my goodness, the driver's been such a liability for a decade in some ways. The chipping's still going to worry me a little bit, but his putting looks unbelievably good. His iron play is unbelievably good. Man, I don't know. I went into this week with a lot of skepticism, and now I'm starting to get the itch to like believe and see how much fun Augusta would be if he's
getting
short irons into greens that he knows really well.
Oh, you're getting me excited. I wasn't excited till I wasn't excited until just now. I was expecting you to bring me back down to earth, but all right. So last year around this time, he had a similar performance at the Hero. And I said something along the lines of like, look, there were definitely some low points of this week. There was nothing like the Club Pro guys' low points in the mid 90s, but it was all we were looking for was signs of life that it was still there, yeah. And it was, and that kind of fizzled out rather quickly. Did this week feel different to you in that regard?
It did, because he was just more in control, and to be honest, he seemed strained a little bit the last time around. He was making putts. I mean, it was like the first time he'd busted out the Scotty in forever, and so we were all sort of excited about that, and like the magic in his putting was back. Like, he was a competent putter with the Nike putter, but like, it wasn't the magical putter that he was before. And I'm sure there's people who think that's ridiculous, but it just honestly, it just really felt like that he just had such better touch and such better pace on the ball. And you know, this time around, like, he seemed much kind of lighter to me mood wise. Like, in his interviews, one of the things that I think I was sort of laughing about in our chat group was about how Golf Channel was like just wanting to kind of touch on all the like all his birdies and all the happy things. And he was like, yeah, but what about the bogey on whatever? It's like, he was bringing up the things that weren't all that great as sort of a way to be like, guys, I'm okay with talking about the highs and lows. Like, I know kind of what I am, and I don't want to jump to Q's conclusions because he's a difficult person in a lot of ways, but I would say I would love to talk to the guys who were there and sort of see, like, it seemed to me like he was a little bit more like at peace with sort of what this comeback sort of is. And even today they're talking to him after the broadcast and they're saying, you know, did you have a better sort of feel of what you meant to the game, like, after all this? And he was like, actually, yeah, like, I do kind of feel like he's like, the world was really small when I was struggling with all those back injuries, and now I kind of just feel better. And they showed his kids on the standing by the green, and they were just smiling their faces off. And I thought, what a cool thing for Charlie and Sam to see their dad, who they've only heard about being great for so long, do these great things, and like all of a sudden have all of these people so excited to watch him. That, to me, like, I seeing those human things from Tiger now really makes me root for him going forward.
Man, you're making me feel feelings today, KBB.
I got the feels out, Solly. It's just, we're sending love across the ocean here, getting you hype.
This might be the longest distance golf podcast ever recorded, for the record. But so that's an interesting point you made about the kids, because I thought about that too. Like, he's got to have a little bit. And I think he's talked about this. I think it was with Charlie Rose about whether or not his kids know about the transgressions and all the things that he's gone through, and how they're kind of coming to that age of being able to understand that, and him not wanting his legacy with his kids to really be that. Of course, they know about his greatness before, but never being able to kind of see it has got to kind of eat at him a little bit. And I know that, and Kevin Kisner talked about this last episode on the podcast when he said, just kind of being in that President's Cup vibe and space kind of encouraged him too, or he said, I think it was before the President's Cup, he hadn't hit anything longer than 60-yard shots. Is that right? And that doesn't seem – I mean, that was 2 months ago. It seems like a pretty rapid transformation to where we are today, with him recoiling and having 180-mile-an-hour ball speed, which is – I don't – so first of all – was that a graphic that was on the Golf Channel? I heard that going around Twitter. Yes. Okay,
they showed a graphic of that. I didn't know if they did the Justin Ray thing that said that only however many people have had a ball speed that high or whatever on tour, but that's like Rory's ball speed.
Like, I was going to say, like, I'm not a huge TrackMan geek, but I know that 180 is fast. Like, that is extremely fast, but... All right, the holiday season is here, but please promise me you guys are not going to be the guys that give the bad golf gifts Our friends at Callaway are here to help you with this. CallawayGolf.com/gift guides. Just check that out. There's a ton of good stuff on there, including Chrome Soft golf balls at just $31.99 plus free personalization. You can throw tour sauce on there. You can throw whatever you want on the side of your golf ball. They got all kinds of other good stuff. They got gift cards. They got range finders. You can build your own custom Callaway Epic driver, all on the CallawayGolf.com gift guide. Again, that's CallawayGolf.com/gift guide. Check it out while you still have time. All right, let's dial it back some, because as much as I was harping on people getting overhyped, here we go. All right, so what's something you saw this week that gave you a reason to be a bit concerned? While reasonable, with any kind of rust that he might had, what concerned you?
I mean, you got to start with chipping. I know that the it's hard Bermuda grass, and that's a good excuse, and everyone was willing to make it for him. But I think that those chipping yips are never, you know, everyone who has covered the game of golf, has followed the game of golf, says that those kind of things never completely go away. And what I will say is that, like, what's the last real round that we saw Tiger play in? It was the Wyndham, and he played his ass off in that thing. It was like, I mean, that was the most banner fun Twitter day of all time, when people just like dropping gifts and fire this right and left, and Tiger pimp stepping and tee snatching and doing, you know, all those, filling up with the world with sauce. And yet that whole round came apart in the final round when he could have won, when he bladed a terrible ball over the green and made a triple. And so it was like the moments when that is going to come back, I think, potentially, are the moments when he has a really tight lie in a really important moment. And, you know, I'm not sure that we're not going to see that again. And that's going to be a little bit cringeworthy to watch. Like, what if he's in a major championship and he's right in the hunt, maybe not in the lead, or maybe in the lead, and he blades a chip sideways? Is that going to sort of make him think twice over the next chip? Is it going to make us sort of be like, oh my God, this is really hard to watch? I don't know. That would be, I guess, my main concern.
How many chips are we talking about for chunks this week?
He really just two bad ones. He kind of got around it a little bit by going with some different like clubs. He wasn't quite, and it was really only in the beginning. He had a couple really good chips today, and one on Saturday. It was like he had to be really creative and run it like through some rough, and it was so. It's, I think, an interesting, in some ways, you know, the sort of the Chuck Knobloch thing where like he couldn't throw the ball to first base or whatever. Mm-hmm. He used to always say that the ones that were routine were the hardest, because you had to, like, how you thought about it. And the ones that he could do, like he could throw the ball to first base without sort of double clutching or throwing it crazily, were the ones that were like hard, like the ones where he had to just make a move, pivot and throw. And the ones, like, it made me think, like, is that possible? That might be true of Tiger. Is the ones where he really has to be creative and really think of it and just kind of draw on his mind, is that going to be a little bit easier in some ways than the ones that are the routine ones where it's like, okay, I totally should this. There's no pressure on this. There's, you know, this is an easy chip. That's something I think to watch. I don't know. I mean, is it something you feel like the chipping scars are going to really stick out, or?
I don't know. Like, I want to chalk that up to rust. I remember in 15 when it was really bad, like the really bad chipping yips, when he was blading chips at Scottsdale, and it was just jarring. I mean, it was more yippy to me than. And he had some bad chips here last year too. I remember, not necessarily even like blades and chips or blades and chunks, but just some really bad misses and just not hitting it close. And then he showed up to Augusta that year in 15 and was hitting like flop pitches off those tight lies, and it was no issue at all. So part of me wants to think, like, all right, he, you know, is going to take what he I don't know what he's been spending most of his time practicing on, but he's going to take what he could get for this week and look around, assess what's the weaknesses in his game and go work on it. So I don't know if that yip thing is something you can mentally get rid of. Maybe he is stuck between release patterns. I don't know, but it's concerning enough, considering that I think the ball striking is kind of being held on by a string a little bit, in that I think it can go awry pretty quickly. I think mm-hmm. Albany does is very friendly off the tee and kind of doesn't demand a lot out of him hitting driver, and a course that will demand a lot more, say Torrey Pines. That's when things really fell apart for him last year. I mean, he didn't make it through Torrey Pines and couldn't find a fairway, and it was kind of a nightmare. So Albany at least lets you like get. We'll get to schedule here in a second. I know. Albany like lets you not fall behind. Like, yeah, you can hit it into the really bad stuff, but your sure. poor drives are minimalized. Your really poor yep. drives are punished. But it allows you to kind of get to that spot where he's always been great, which is hitting iron. So it's in that regard, it is again where we have to draw the line. Like, this was an 18 person like kind of pitch and putt tournament that was, you know, just a cash grab and world rankings grab. But at the same time, he teed it up for four rounds and he tied yep. Matt Kuchar. He beat Justin Thomas. He beat Kevin Kisner, Alex Noren, Daniel Berger, Dustin Johnson, Kevin Chappell, Henrik Stenson, and Brooks Koepka. Like, I don't think that means nothing. I mean, again, it's not these guys didn't show up like ready to grind out a tournament, but they also showed up ready to play a tournament and wanting to compete, and yeah. he beat those guys. So to me, that means at least something. But going forward, and he talked a bit about it in the booth today just now about trying to figure out what his schedule is going to look like, and it sounds like it's going to be different. It sounds like it's not going to be too intense, but if you're him, how do you make out your schedule for the winter and the spring?
I just don't want to see him play Torrey. I've been saying that in public and in private for a long time. Like, it's the potential that it could be 50 degrees there. It's always cold there in the morning, and so he's going to have a morning tea time at some point. You know, the whole point of, like, I couldn't get my glutes activated, whatever, it was because, like, it was an early morning round, and he apparently, you know, did or didn't have – I mean, the one other thing I'll say as we're talking about schedule that worried me a little bit is that he – had something. I had a really good gym session this morning, you know, and I just made me feel like, what are you doing in the gym? Like, I know you have to be in the gym, and you're strengthening your back, I'm sure, in some ways. But like, if you're doing like lifts to get yoked or whatever, then that's what happened last time. Like, we've talked about this a lot, that he looked sort of skinny, or not skinny, but lithe kind of and flexible in the Bahamas 2 years ago or whatever. And then all of a sudden he started kind of bulking up, and he just looked bigger when he got to Torrey in Dubai. And his body looked slower. Like, I want to see him stay healthy in a way that isn't quite, have to be look like quite as macho. And so, I don't know, like, just play the humana, you know, play some tournaments that you've never played before, or that you've not that you've never played before, but you haven't played in a while, and just feel kind of like soak up some of the love from the people who are super appreciative for you to be there. What's the Safeway or whatever that he was going to play and that he pulled out of? I mean, that all of that just, I don't know. What would your ideal schedule be for him going forward?
I like that idea for the Hubana. I was actually thinking about that. Yeah. Like, I'd rather see you do that than Torrey Pines.
That's a bird fest. Like, you know, he just proved down here he can throw a lot of birdies and stuff.
And it's not nearly as demanding with the driver. You get more, you know, just more reps of, I don't want to say be in contention, but like, I think he can make the cut at the Humana easily. Like, I hope he plays Phoenix. I think that makes a lot of sense. I know that's kind of where a lot of the scar tissue is from the chipping, but man, wide fairways out there and kind of just, it's the course has been toughened a lot in the last recent years, but that's a place that I think would suit him well. But man, trying to, yeah, like you said, 45 degrees early morning, fog, and trying to grind the ball out of that rough at Torrey Pines. Nah, I'm good, man. Like, I don't necessarily want to see that. It sounded like Joey LaCava, I heard him say that he got the sense that the days of going to Dubai are over. If that's the case, I think that's good too. I mean, I don't see any reason to go there other than
I'm looking forward to the Tron conspiracy when he goes and plays Torrey and they cut the rough down to like an inch. He goes nuclear about how the integrity of the game has been broken by Torrey changing the conditions to suit Tiger.
I would love that. I wouldn't mind seeing him go play Sony either. I mean,
yeah,
that's not a big driver fest. He could hit that tragedy 2-iron off the tee all over the place there. And
I think if he's going to compete at Carnoustie this year, the tragedy 2-iron is going to be huge, because hitting driver over there, if you know, if you're not 100% confident about it, it's going to be a little bit
dicey.
If go sideways,
you just said the phrase. If he competes at Carnoustie this year,
I can't believe I got sucked in already. I'm the biggest skeptic there is, and I got sucked in already in 8 minutes of this podcast.
It's so easy to do, man. It's easy to do. No, I think this conversation's got me feeling better than I did at the start of it, I think. I mean, I don't know. Seeing, I don't know if prowess is the right word or his aura. Like it felt like it was there more so than last year. Last year, it just kind of felt, I don't know. It was cool to see, but it didn't feel like something that was lasting. I don't know. I'm not saying this feels lasting, but this, I don't know why I walked away from this feeling. Maybe just I watched less of it, but I just walked away from this actually feeling pretty good and thinking that this one's going to be a little different. He's not a dumb person by any stretch of the imagination. Like he had to have learned something from whatever he did last year. Can we agree on that?
Yes. I mean, the swing last year looked like it was being held together by Band-Aids. And this one looks like it's sort of at least built on like duct tape or steel. You know, it's a little bit better than what it was. I don't honestly yet trust his ability to take this cautiously. And so when he's ripping it out there past all these young guys, like, and it's kind of doing that sort of cocky walk, like, he still loves that he can hit it past those guys or that he can hit it with them. And so can you practice? That's what I've always thought. And Bacon and I have been talked about this on his pod, is like, can you practice for 3 days leading up to a tournament and then play 4 rounds hitting balls before every, that's a lot of swings. And so this is the very first step, and whatever, you know, completing this tournament and not embarrassing yourself was the sort of baseline. And obviously we got a lot better result than that, just as fans. And so, yeah, great. I want to see that, but it's like, what happens next? I think too that no one really talks about this, which is just weird to me, but like, he's really going to have to play going forward for the first time without any kind of painkillers. Like it's obvious that was part of his regular routine. I mean, he's 6 months removed from having gone to rehab, you know, and all of those various like painkillers and sleep aids and medical marijuana was all in his system. And everyone's so buzzy about like, oh, we're so happy that Tiger's back, that I think that that's the kind of stuff we need to think about. Like, okay, what is he going to do to sort of manage pain? Because while the pain may be lessened for his back being fused, like, it's not going to be eliminated. Like, we didn't fix the pain in his knees, which have had 5 or 6 surgeries on whatever. And so all of that is going to, you know, if he plays 3 out of 4 weeks at some point, which you would think he would have to do at some point, then what is that going to be like in that fourth week where he's stiff and he feels like, man, I just don't have it today.
I like forgot about the DUI until you said that. Like, yeah. It so much has happened in the last few months that I had like forgotten that happened. So what is, and I've been actually learning more about it this past week more than I have when it actually happened, but this fusion surgery that first of all, we need like a nickname for it. He needs like a robot nickname for having this surgery. But first, like, what do you know about the actual surgery and why this one was so different?
That's a great question. I honestly don't. I mean, I know Love had it. I know that Goosen had it. But beyond that, I mean, I think it's just, you know, when your back starts to go, it's because of the, I've been totally playing like amateur doctor here. It's because the, you know, the kind of rubbery sort of fluid between your vertebrae is kind of like, your back is basically rubbing bone on bone. And so there's an enormous amount of pain, and it pinches the nerves a lot in there. And so in order to sort of stop those two vertebrae from hurting like all hell, they basically just go in there and they fuse them together so that they can't, you know, they can't rotate against one another. And here I am. We're doing a podcast, and I'm using like my hands to talk to describe this as if you could see this. But I mean, that's my sort of very limited layman's understanding of it. And so you're giving up some flexibility for the sort of, you know, taking away the potential nerve pain and the bone grinding on bone pain. And, you know, the fact that he just didn't have this kind of action at the ball the last time around when they were sort of doing, I think, you know, microdiscectomies, I think, are like they drill little holes in there to try to like create more. I'm completely making this up, but it's like the last resort procedure that you can do. And, you know, Love had it and apparently talked him into it and said it kind of, you know, it saved Goosen's career. And so too, and they sort of felt like, you know, this could be really good for you. And, you know, gosh, like, how can you right now, like, it just looks a lot better. Will he be smart enough about just taking it slow and not thinking like, well, I'm fixed. I'm back to being Superman. Like, let's get some power cleans, man. I'm going to do a lift off in the gym here with Koepka.
Well, I forget, it was a couple of weeks ago, a couple of months ago when he had a blog post that said he was lifting 2 times a day, 6 days a week, which, I mean, apparently, like, maybe his routine's different, but whatever, man. Like, I'm done fighting that one. But I did some Googling while you were talking, and it's a minimally invasive anterior lumbar interbody fusion. It's a procedure that removes a large portion of a degenerated disc that is causing back pain and replaces it with a bone graft. So it's the goal of a fusion procedure is to provide stability to the spine and reduce painful symptoms. So this surgery, we've heard great things about what it's done for him. And to me, it looked like he commented on this about how he built his swing kind of around this surgery. Did he say something like that?
I think there was, yeah.
That makes more sense. That starts to make sense to me. Like, look, this is how I'm swinging the club now because of this surgery. And if, I don't know, I don't want to say like he's not at risk to re-injure it, but I feel like that gives me more confidence that he's found something that's going to work for his current state of health. It's not to say one swing doesn't ruin everything, but man, this surgery sounds like a big deal. And I don't know, maybe things are different.
Is he still working with Cuomo? I haven't seen any indication that he's not, but anyway, shout out to all the back surgeons out there who are ready to like light me up on Twitter about my incorrect summation of what a fusion is. You can't find me there.
You can't find me. Good. All right. I thought this, we were going to spend 30 minutes on this podcast getting like dialing people back from all the hype. But all I can say is what would you, for you're not on golf Twitter anymore, but what would you be your recommendation to people following along and wanting to share their opinions? This goes to like brands and everyone in golf as well. Cause that's what overwhelmed me this past week was just the overreaction and all of the gifts and all that. It's like, all right, guys, like I know we've done this before, but I don't know, what would your advice be to people?
Be cautiously optimistic. Like, no one wants to go through the misery of what happened with Dubai and Tory again, and so I don't think there's any chance that this is possible. Like, we've joked a little bit about how, I mean, to me, the Golf Channel is a little bit like Tiger's Pravda. Like, they're so financially invested in Tiger's success that they're sort of like, you know, Tiger's amazing, Tiger's back, it's Tiger all the time. And I just worry that it's a little bit repeating some of the mistakes of what they've already made. And then there's a group of people out there that's like, oh, well, if it's not about Tiger, then I don't care. So if he goes away, they're just not going to care. And as a long-term strategy, I think that's kind of a little bit short-sighted. I just wish, as someone whose background is in journalism, that we could cover Tiger as a journalistic entity for some of it. I mean, like, you know, Noda should not be the person like following him on the court. That should be Bones. Like, Noda is essentially, he's one step away from carrying Tiger's bag. Like, we're talking, like, he's almost reading putts. He's referring to them as we. Like, come on. Like, you're pretty good friends with Justin Thomas at this point. I don't think that you would show the lack of objectivity that Noda shows if you were like the on-course reporter following JT around. It's really uncomfortable for me. And it's so, I mean, look, I don't expect great journalism from the PGA Tour or whatever, but like when Golf Digest is like posting videos of them like clapping and cheering about, you know, Tiger's back. Like, can you imagine like if I had, and I said this to you already, but like, can you imagine if when Peyton Manning came back that I posted a video of myself like standing and cheering on my couch, like, yeah, Peyton, you threw a 10-yard out. Oh my gosh, football is saved.
Tom Cruise on Oprah.
Yeah, I couldn't dream of doing that. Like, so I just feel like, have some pride and let's cover Tiger objectively. Let's be happy for him, but let's also understand that like he's been a very important person within the sport, and with that, you know, we can be happy for his success, but also kind of still cover him like a journalistic subject.
Wow. Well, I like that answer. I thought you were just going to say, tell golf.com to just stop direct stealing my memes, but whatever. Oh! Whatever your answer was, that's fine. That's fine, too.
There's a lot of criticism going on this podcast. I love it.
No, I just couldn't get swept up in it. It was just like literally every single thing you read was cat and an overreaction or whatever to everything that just happened. It was just, I wasn't that upset to miss it. When he comes back for a real tournament, I'm going to be plugged in and tuned in. Like, it's going to be, like I said, we're just looking for signs of life. We saw it, and it gives us reason to be optimistic and to look forward to things. But like you said, I want, and it's not going to happen, but I wish that like we could have objective, like, okay, like, I don't know, like in the middle conversations about what we're seeing. Yeah. Otherwise, it's just all a big waste of time, and it's not that fun. So.
Yeah. But should we talk about the Rick at all? But see, he just shot 61.
Oh, did he win?
He did win by a significant margin.
Usually I would be very critical of networks just, blowing the Tiger thing out and not paying attention to the tournament. This is the one tournament that it's totally fine to do that.
It's a slightly above when we played at the Oak Ridge course down in Jacksonville and had a tournament best ball there. But, it's not quite much beyond that, right?
No, I will never remember that Ricky Fowler won this tournament. Like, I might use that if I need to make a Ricky argument in the future. I might cite that, but otherwise, I will never not remember who won this week. It will be, I don't remember who won last year. And don't tell me, I don't remember who won last year.
Yeah, I don't. It was Hideki. the Rick, he looked good, but as I said, I didn't know how fervent the Rick fans were until I wrote a super mildly critical column of him at the US Open, be like, hey, it's time to get one of these things done. Like, you're too good to not have one of these now. So, it's time for you to step up and do it. And oh my God, the bombardment of hate. Like, you'd think that Porter had linked it on one of the Oak State message boards or something. Like, it was vicious.
He might have. Porter might have rallied the troops.
What if Porter's a double agent?
See, that's interesting. I feel like there's more Rick haters than there are Rick taters.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't know. Well, I feel like I'm always defending Rick.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe the ESPN.com audience is different than the NoLayingUp.com the audience. So
that might be the case.
Maybe the Rick haters, they hang out at ESPN and the taters are over with you. So who knows?
Did you just... throw this in as a token, we're not going to spend literally every second of this podcast talking about Tiger.
Yes, for the two people out there who want to criticize us for screwing up the discussion of back fusions and the fact that we didn't salute Rick enough for winning a hit and giggle, then that's what I threw that in for. Yeah, I honestly have no interest in it. He looked good. He putted really unbelievably well. He's a good putter. I wish I was a tenth of the putter he is.
Hit and giggle. I love that. I love using that to call it this tournament. So. KBV, thanks for taking time out of your Sunday. I will report ahead that Monday, what's the date today? Monday the 4th is a glorious day. I'm reporting from the future. And thanks for taking the time. And everyone, have a wonderful December. We'll be checking in again shortly here. But KBV, take it easy, buddy.
Thanks, buddy. Go play some more world-class golf courses.
Yeah, I know. I know. I will.
Yeah.
Okay. Later.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything.